Next case for argument, Manicki v. Zeilman. Mr. Coolin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Jeffrey Colwin, and I represent the plaintiff appellant Mark Manicki in this matter. There are two key reasons why res judicata is inapplicable here. The underlying principle behind res judicata is to prevent litigants from taking more than one bite at the apple, to prevent them from bringing two claims in two separate forums.
Well, you were trying to take a second bite, right? Because you'd named Zeilman in your initial complaint. He's the one who, you know, retaliated. So having done that, what basis did you have for trying to bring the suit again? I don't understand.
Well, Judge,
Why is he named in this? I mean, you claim the first suit, oh, that's just about what the board did and so on. The board didn't give you a hearing. But, of course, you name Zeilman personally and is his official capacity and so on. He's not a member of the board, is he?
No, Judge, he's not a member of the
board. So why is he named as defendant? And then you ask for relief in very broad terms.
That's true, Judge. There was relief asked for in very broad terms, and I believe that the reason that Zeilman was named as a defendant in the case had to do with the Illinois Administrative Review Act and naming all of the parties that are involved in the administrative decision that's being challenged. Nevertheless, despite the fact that Mr. Manicki sought broad relief, it's very clear when reading his administrative review complaint that what he seeks in that complaint is not the adjudication of the underlying reasons why he was terminated.
Oh, sure, but you're not allowed to hold back. You know, once you have all the defendants and you have the transaction out of which your claim arises, you're not allowed to, you know, cut off the cat's tail in slices and say, first you sue, you complain about what the board did, and then what the board did not giving you a hearing, then you complain about what the board did in believing Zeilman, and right?
Well, you're not allowed to hold back claims, Judge. That's correct, if provided that those claims all emanate out of the same.
Well, they do, obviously. I mean, everything comes out of this alleged retaliation against Manicki for having insisted that both officers in this fight were at fault. That's the transaction. He insists they're both at fault, and as a result, he's retaliated against, and he loses his proceeding before the board. And so the board and Zeilman, between them, have gotten rid of him. So.
Well, that's true, Judge. However, he didn't lose a proceeding before the board, Judge. He had no proceeding before the board.
Right.
And that
that's one of the complaints is that the board committed procedural error. The other is that the board erroneously rejected his claim, right?
No, Judge. The board had no basis to even consider what his claim was.
It certainly rejected it.
Well,
right? It rejected it, and you think that was wrong. So that's why you sued them.
Well,
sued the board.
We don't know exactly what the board decided to do or not do because its decision was based on a summary
Whatever
termination.
It did, you think is wrong. And that's why you sued them. And one reason it's wrong is that it was wrong for them to base their action on what Zeilman had told them. And that's why you joined, presumably why you Zeilman's too.
Well, Mr. Manicki's union lawyers filed the complaint, named the parties, and I can't speak for what was in their mind when they named Mr. Zeilman as a defendant in that case. But
well,
sure
that's
enough.
That's what it was in their mind. It says that the recommendation for dismissal made by Chief of Police Zeilman was made in retaliation for plaintiffs acting as a witness in a criminal matter against another police officer and could constitute criminal offense of harassment of a witness.
That allegation is in his state court administrative complaint. That's absolutely true, but it's an allegation that has no legal impact on that complaint. It did not matter whether or not Chief Zielman terminated Mr. Manicki for an unconstitutional reason or not. Either Mr. Manicki was entitled to a hearing before the board or he wasn't. That is
based. What weight should we give to paragraph F in count one? This is on page 8 of the complaint. Declare, pursuant to various provisions, that the action of the defendants violate plaintiff's right of freedom of speech under the First Amendment. Well, that's clearly a substantive claim against Zielman and the board. It's not about not having a hearing, right?
There's no dispute that that allegation is in his complaint, but it had no legal effect.
I don't know what you mean by had no legal effect. You can't allege something in your first claim and then suing the same parties after that case is disposed of, repeat the claim. I don't understand you. Why do you say it has no legal effect?
It has no legal effect because the Illinois State Court did not consider and couldn't have considered whether or not Zielman had unconstitutional retaliatory reasons for terminating Mr. Manicki. The reason that that allegation was in the complaint was to emphasize the importance of providing probationary police officers.
It's not an allegation. It's a request for relief. It's a request for a declaratory judgment.
Well, it's true that that is in there. And if I could reallege that complaint, I probably would. But the underlying facts that support the administrative review complaint are substantially different.
Hey, hold on. I think I was reading from the wrong complaint. Right. Sorry. This I was reading for your federal complaint. Yeah,
okay.
I shouldn't have done that. So forget that.
Well, the paragraph I read is in your state complaint.
Right. That's true. That's true. But the basis upon which res judicata is decided is whether or not the two claims emanate from the same group of facts. Do they arise out of the same group of facts? And there are two cases that are right on point on that particular issue, one decided by this court in Herman and another decided by the Illinois Appellate Court in LPXXVI. And what both of those cases stand for is that just because you have one event does not necessarily mean that all claims that emanate out of that event must be brought in the same suit. In Herman, for example,
is there some reason, some practical reason for splitting them into two suits?
Yes, there's a practical reason for doing that. I think police officers have very important reasons for wanting to pursue a claim first in an administrative hearing before filing full-blown constitutional violation claims. Had Manicki had his administrative hearing, he could have, within the insulation of that hearing, litigated the reasons why Chief Zielman believed he didn't successfully complete his probationary period before running into court, be it state court or federal court, and asserting his constitutional violation claims. Those are very important reasons why res judicata shouldn't be applied.
I don't understand you. He did run into court to challenge the administrative claim.
He ran into court to determine whether or not he was entitled to an administrative hearing under the collective bargaining agreement. He had a right to.
Once he's in court, though, why doesn't he throw everything he has at the defendants?
You know, that has historically never been the rule for res judicata because
we were talking about a practical reason. Why doesn't he put everything in that complaint? Once he's in court, you know, you said he didn't want to run to court. Well, okay, but he did run to court. Now, why doesn't he put everything in his? In that case.
Well, I think it's a very different thing to run into court and say, I'm entitled to a pre-termination hearing before you let me go, and a completely different matter to run into court and say, you unconstitutionally retaliated against me
but
for
no,
whistleblowing.
But no, look, he's taking two bites at the apple. He wants to get his hearing. If he gets his hearing and wins, he's fine. If he gets his hearing and loses, then he's going to bring a second lawsuit, the 1983 suit. So should we encourage that kind of behavior?
I see that I'm out of time. If I could just answer my that question. I believe that there are valid reasons for doing that. And the claims are inconsistent in the sense that if he would have brought both claims at the same time, what good would be his prevailing in the claim of obtaining a pre-termination hearing if he's already decided his Section 1983 claims?
Precisely.
Well, I think that there's a...
That's the whole point, right? If he brings everything at once, that shortens... Then if he wins on his... His two claims. One, didn't get a pre-termination hearing. Second, that in any event, Zeilman, acted unconstitutionally. If he wins on the second ground, that moots the first. You don't have to have the hearing. So that then heads off. Whereas if you do it your way, and he gets his hearing but still loses, he then brings the second suit. So that's a multiplication of proceedings. I don't know why we need that.
Respectfully, I would disagree on the grounds that his right to a pre-termination hearing is meaningless if he litigates whether or not he's entitled to that pre-termination hearing at the same time as he litigates the underlying unconstitutional reasons why he was terminated.
Sure, but that's just another way of saying that your pre-termination issue is just a reserve, because if you can win on the constitution, on the retaliation claim, you can forget about the hearing.
I think that assumes that if he wins on the unconstitutional claim, that the board would find in his favor at the administrative hearing, and I don't believe that that's necessarily a foregone conclusion. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Koenig?
Morning. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Contrary to what plaintiff's counsel says, he is seeking two bites of the apple. As I understand the procedural...
No, he admits he's seeking two bites of the apple. He just thinks he's entitled to the two bites.
That's correct, Your Honor. As I understand the administrative law, the chief of police is not a necessary party in any administrative review. Rather, the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners is the necessary party, as was done in this case. While Your Honor was reading from the federal complaint regarding the allegations of retaliation in paragraph 7 of the complaint for administrative review, plaintiff says the recommendation for dismissal made by Chief of Police Brian Zeilman was made in retaliation for plaintiffs acting as a witness in a criminal matter against another police officer and would constitute the criminal offense of harassment of a witness. So right in paragraph 7 of that complaint for administrative review, he inserts the same allegation of fact. I think plaintiff's counsel in his brief says, well, that was just to emphasize the importance of the proceeding of my complaint for administrative review. Well, for whatever reasons it was inserted, the fact remains that he injected into that complaint for administrative review that allegation of retaliation. However, we maintain that even apart from that allegation of retaliation contained in the complaint for administrative review, issue preclusion and res judicata under, or claim preclusion rather, and res judicata under Illinois law clearly forecloses action.
Now, were it not for that paragraph, you left the chief out, as you say you could have, then there would be no problem.
Had he not named the chief as a defendant and had he not alleged retaliation, we maintain the same result would still obtain.
You would.
It's correct that this procedure, this action is barred under principles of res judicata. The absence of the chief of police, I would simply point out that in Garcia versus Mount Prospect, the court held that the individual defendants in that case were in privity with the city. And we would still have the same claim or same transaction. The focus of res judicata is not the decision of the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners. What's res judicata is really the decision of the circuit court entering judgment in favor of the defendants, and that's what this court pointed out in Garcia. The plaintiff tried to make a similar claim in Garcia, and in footnote 8, what he was alleging was, he's saying, listen, the Board of Fire and, or the pension board in Garcia was focusing on whether or not my disability was duty related. That's completely different from what I'm trying to allege here in federal court, that I was retaliated against because I testified in connection with a civil discrimination claim that was brought against the village. The court in footnote 8 says you're focusing on the wrong thing. You're talking about the board's decision. What's res judicata is the circuit court's decision. And in this case, what's res judicata is that this identical 1983 claim could have been joined along with the administrative review appeal. Even though the administrative review appeal was an on-the-record review, and not a de novo review. This court's made clear in interpreting Illinois law that a 1983 claim alleging retaliation could have been filed. We maintain it should have been filed under principles of res judicata, and if it's not, it's foreclosed.
You're saying there's no way he could challenge whatever the rules are, or under a probationary. You get 1 year pretty much at will termination or whatever it was. I don't know what the union contract said. But you're saying that there's no way he could separately charge this retaliation independently of this question of whether or not he has some sort of administrative appeal or any right as a probationary employee to at least have a hearing before being terminated.
That's our argument, Your Honor. That's our position. That he cannot.
That out.
He cannot. We maintain that under the same transaction test, which has to be followed, the claim or cause of action arises out of the termination of employment.
So the mere fact that he was terminated incorporates any allegation that's available.
That's correct. That's correct. We maintain that if you're going to challenge the procedures utilized in connection with termination of employment, you better also challenge the reasons. It involves the same claim. Chief Zeilman requested that the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners fire him. And now he's saying, well, I want to challenge why he asked to fire. We maintain that's the same claim, particularly if you look at the decision of the state court in the Horton versus Caterpillar case, where the court says, your claim, your federal claim that involved an interpretation of the collective bargaining agreement is the same claim that you're now bringing here where you're alleging the tort of retaliatory discharge. Both involve termination, and that was the phrase that the court used, involve termination. Not the reasons for termination, not the procedure for termination, but termination. And we maintain that that adverse, as long as the challenge in state court involves the same employment decision, if you're going to challenge why the decision was made, or if you're going to challenge how the decision was made and the fairness of the decision, or just whether you're entitled to a hearing, you better also challenge the reasons that that employment decision was brought about. The River Park case, we use as an example. That was a case where the plaintiff was completely denied a hearing in federal court. I mean, he was saying, I should have had a hearing under state law before they stole my golf course in Highland Park. Court said, we're not here to afford you due process. That's a state matter. Because there is a judicial remedy, that provides all the processes due. They then brought an action in state court challenging the motivation, challenging that this was just an abuse of government power. The Illinois Supreme Court said it involves the same transaction. It's what happened to your golf course. The fact that you claimed that you were entitled to a hearing before you were horsed around is the same claim as what you're now seeking to maintain in the state court, where you're challenging the abuse of government power. Your Honor has addressed the lease transaction test talks about it being the transaction test talks about it being the least restrictive and the pragmatic test, the more pragmatic test. Pragmatically, an action should be brought when you're challenging an employment decision. In the 30 years that I've been practicing, the plaintiff's counsel spoke of expectations of the parties. In the 30 years that I've been practicing, routinely, when a public employee is complaining about due process, it's not uncommon to find some type of a discrimination claim appended to that action as well. Accepting plaintiff's counsel's argument, I think I asked a question in my brief. I said, if we accept what he's arguing, then he could have come into this court and not sought administrative review, but rather come to this court and said, I was denied procedural due process because I had a property right in my employment under the collective bargaining agreement. And then if he lost, he could have filed a second action. I think when I asked the question in that manner, that clearly indicates that shouldn't be the law, that the pragmatic result of res judicata should be if you're challenging an employment decision for either why it was done or how it was brought about, you better bring all your claims in one bunch, and that's the principles of res judicata. I pointed out that in Horton, which I maintain is an Illinois case, which is pretty similar. It involved a prior filing of a federal claim and a subsequent retaliation claim. There the court said, and I quote, that the single group of operative facts giving rise to Horton's claim involve his termination. That's what happened in state. That's what happened in state court in this case. His claim that he sought administrative review of involved his termination. Now he's trying to say, well,
I think we've got your point.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Koenig. Mr. Cohen?
His time expired.
Oh, your time expired, but you can have a minute if you have something to note.
Thank you, Judge. Just because the res judicata analysis is more pragmatic doesn't mean that it's a cursory or formalistic analysis. Mr. Manicki is not taking two bites at the same apple. What he's doing is filing two claims based upon two independent employment actions. And you, Your Honor, said in Hermann that a single
two employment actions. He was fired. That's what he's complaining about.
He was complaining about not getting a pre-termination hearing, and he was complaining about being fired.
He doesn't care about the hearing. He cares about being fired. Not having a hearing is just one of his grounds for trying to get his job back.
Not having a hearing, Judge, is what led to him being forced to file a Section 1983 claim. If he'd had a hearing, he might not have had the need to file a federal constitutional
claim. He might do it anyway, get some money.
He might do it anyway to get some money, but he wouldn't have had to.
Fees reimbursed.
Also true, Judge, but a young employee, a young first-time police officer who's trying to keep his first job as a cop has valid and important reasons for wanting to litigate those issues as to why he was terminated before a board instead of running into federal court and alleging that his boss unconstitutionally retaliated
against
him.
Well, he alleged it in his statement.
His union lawyers alleged that in his complaint in order to emphasize the importance
of having
a hearing.
We're back to where we were. You're not going to win this fight with him. So.
Thank you for your time,
Thank you very much, Mr. Cohen, and both lawyers.